everyone. My name is Aarti, and this is the Mahabharata. Episode 55, Arjuna in Heaven and Matchmaking Fall. Also available online at www.themahabharatapodcast.com or facebook.com/themahabharatapodcast. In our last episode, the Pandavas see a visit from Grandfather Vyasa, who advocates advanced military training for Arjuna in the realm of the gods. Arjuna sets off, trekking the Himalayas. And he has some adventures along the way. He meets Indra, disguised as an ascetic. He meets Shiva, disguised as a tribal. He meets the world guardians, the gods of death, wealth, and the cosmic waters. And when we left him, Mountain Buffalo was scrambling to evade Varuna's noose as Arjuna practiced using the nifty new weapons he'd acquired. Today, we're hanging atop Mount Mandara with Arjuna as he waits impatiently for the next step of his journey. He's been advised he'll be transported to the heavens, but it's been weeks, and how, when, and by whom is still a mystery. To pass the time, he's practicing a new skill of axe throwing, hurling the lethal object at targets, scaring the pants off the squirrels. Suddenly, he hears a sound, like a mighty crack in the sky, and he sees what must be a meteor headed his way at breakneck speed. But before he can duck, it stops, and he finds himself staring down rows of deadly missile launchers fitted onto an armored starship. Okay, fine, our tech says armored chariot, but work with me, okay? It's massive and hovers just above the tree line. He can see swiveling infrared surveillance cameras, artillery arms holding weapons, blades and rockets, thunderbolts, laser assault systems, particle beams. This has to be Indra's ship. What else could it be? While Arjuna waits in anticipation, the gates open and a stairway descends to the mountain. A tall man dismounts in spotless naval captain's uniform, followed by armed naval guards. Mr. Pandava, is it? Mathali, captain of Lord Indra's fleet. Come with me, please. Bidding a hasty goodbye to the mountain, Arjuna gathers his weapons. Yama's twig, now safely in a scabbard. Varuna's noose, which he slings Indiana Jones style onto one hip. Kubera's fisherman's net, slung on the other hip. And his bow, the Gandiv, onto his shoulder. Feeling distinctly like a hairy country yokel, Arjuna boards the silver ship, almost jumping as the doors shut sleekly behind him. They walk. This is amazing, Arjuna sputters. Crisply uniformed navy personnel step aside discreetly as they proceed through gleaming corridors. As they lift above the clouds, he sees scores of starships whizzing about the outer atmosphere. Russia, mutters Mathali with irritation. They emerge into open space. Arjuna sees the stars that look so tiny on Earth are now enormous luminescent spheres. On the ship's high-def screens, he sees planets with inhabitants, long-departed ancestors now sitting about shooting the breeze. On another star, he sees legendary warriors, erstwhile enemies, now laughing over a bill. On yet another planet, he sees Gandharvas and Apsaras dressed to the nines at a gala with famous kings. They shoot through the skies, stars flashing past like distant balls of light. A short while later, they enter a new galaxy marked by a brilliantly luminous pathway of stars. Arjuna instinctively sits up. Amravati, announces the ship's PA system. This is our final destination. We hope you've enjoyed your journey. Please ensure you take all your personal belongings with you. They enter a massive parking lot and the ship docks at a spot marked reserved. It's the city of Indra. Now, I know you're excited, as am I, to get a peek into heaven. How will it be? Will there be fluffy white clouds and folks eating cream cheese? But what Arjuna finds fills him with delight. It's the most vibrantly lush space he's ever seen. Gardens extending forever of the most vivid green, flowers to thrill the senses. Exhilarating weather, shimmering water, the fragrance of a million flowers greets him, delicate and intoxicating. Arjuna feels his troubles drop off his back as a feeling of joyous calm descends upon him. At the border is a pavilion, an exquisitely wrought structure of four marble elephants. There stands Indra, looking like Sean Connery, rakishly handsome in his natural form. "Welcome, my son," he embraces Arjuna warmly. Arjuna had a million questions, but forgets them all. So enchanted is he. Accompanied by dancing peacocks and chattering birds, Indra ushers him into his palace. Monday morning starts boot camp at the Military Academy of the Gods. They shave Arjuna's head and give him a uniform. Although he's already an elite warrior, he's required to undergo basic training with the gods, and it's a grueling regime. The day starts pre-dawn with drills, then alternates weapons and combat training with a series of sports. But evenings end the same way, with dance training. What? Arjuna initially balks at the idea of dance. No way I'm doing pirouettes. I'm not a girl. Trust me, will you? Insists Indra. First of all, don't be a Neanderthal. Boys dance too. Didn't you see Billy Elliot? Second, your mum must have told you. It's a crucial social skill. Breeds poise and grace. Most importantly, elite athletes often start as dancers. Haven't you noticed the best hockey pros did figure skating? Arjuna hadn't noticed. Besides, Indra adds casually, you never know when it comes in handy. Arjuna rolls his eyes. Right, I'm going to waltz Karna off the battlefield. Open your mind, lad, Indra chides him. So Arjuna learns to dance. His days are occupied with underwater demolition and missile launching. In the evening, he gives himself to the arts. He's a wonderful tenor, plays violin and rhythm like a pro, is a master of Indian dance styles, and does jetés like Baryshnikov. Soon he's a favorite in the discotheques of heaven with his sultry salsa and his hip-hop moves. He's having so much fun, time flies by, and before he knows it, his training is complete. But Indra is not ready to part with him, and whenever Arjuna raises the topic of home, Indra strolls. So soon, you haven't even learned scuba warfare yet. One day, a sage named Lomash happens by, of no great consequence to us. He chances upon Arjuna relaxing on the throne of Indra and is scandalized, a mere mortal on the seat of the Lord of Heaven. But Indra laughs, that's my son, don't you recognize him? He's actually the sage Nar. Remember he and Narayan used to live in that sacred grove at Badri? Narayan's now on assignment as Krishna and Nar is Arjuna. But good you're here, I have a job for you. He tells the rishi to head back down to earth. Go to Yudhishthira, where he's living in the Kamyaka forest. Tell him not to worry about Arjuna. Okay? He's going to be here sometime. Takes time to perfect military skills. Why don't they travel? Tell them to go on pilgrimage. Visit the sacred sites. It'll keep them occupied. But make sure you go with them. Keep them out of harm. Gotcha, boss. Indra has a care package assembled, and the rishi takes the heavenly pastries as treats for the Pandavas. Snakes are drizzling into the fire. Sometimes entire families fall together, shrieking, sizzling in the flame. Other times they drop like the steady patter of raindrops. If an errant snake tries to escape, the priests push it back with a stick. But our primary listener, Jenemajor, is not even concerned with the snakes, so engrossed is he with the story. Now he has some questions. So that's about great-grandpa Arjuna. What do the others do while he's up in the heavens? How do they live? What do they eat? The narrator, Vaishampayana, fills him in. Good you asked. You might think the Pandavas are sitting about sighing all day, but they're actually very busy. First of all, at any given time, there are minimum 10,000 Brahmins with them at the camp. Can you imagine? It's like a small city. Just feeding that number means hunting half the day. But the Pandavas also develop routines to keep from missing Arjuna. Yudhishthira reads philosophy with the Brahmins. Bhima and the twins hunt and turn everything into a competitive sport. They run marathons and races, swim lengths. They try Mongol-style mounted combat, practice MMA. Arjuna may be training in the heavens, but they want him to find a nimble, lethal fighting force upon his return. Cool. Jenemajor watches absently as a family of snakes writhes and seethes in the blaze. And we're talking about the Pandavas. What are the Kauravas doing all this time? Do they know about my great-grandpa's trip to heaven? Vaishampayana responds, they do. King Dhritarashtra learns of Arjuna's trip from Rishi Vyasa himself, who makes a point of telling him. As soon as Arjuna is admitted into the heavens, Rishi Vyasa drops in at the Hastinapur palace for lunch. Just imagine Dhritarashtra's reaction. He almost chokes on his kebab. He's been keeping close tabs on the Pandavas through his intelligence network, so he already knows about Krishna's visit and the discussions there. But Arjuna going to the heavens? That gives him ulcers. Dinner and a round of drinks, and the story continues. One day, as the Pandavas are prepping lunch, a certain Rishi Brihadashva happens along on his namesake giant horse. He's just passing through, so we don't need to worry about him. But he's been travelling the backwoods without signal, so is shocked to find the Pandavas in the forest. I'm the unluckiest man in the world, sir, Yudhishthira sighs. I was invited to gamble by crooks who were expert at it. I hardly knew how to play, and they cheated me out of everything. My home, my kingdom, they abused my wife, who's dearer to me than my own life. How unlucky would I have to be to lose every single bet? That's me, a total jinx. Rishi Big Horse brushes that off placidly. Let me tell you about someone really unlucky. Have you heard of Nal, Prince of Nishad? Now that's a man who was truly unlucky. And as twilight turns to dusk, they sit around the fire and he launches into the tale of Nal and his wife, Damayanti. Now, strictly speaking, Nal and Damayanti are not pertinent to the Pandava story. So if your brain is already bursting with names and characters are starting to pop out and run amok in the streets, you may be forgiven for some rebellion. No, you might yell, no more tongue-twisting multisyllabic names. And I feel your pain, I do. But hear me out. True, the story of Nal and Damayanti is in our text mostly to entertain and edify and to mirror themes in the Bharata story. So do you really need to make room in an already crowded head? On the other hand, Nadi is one of the most famous tales of Sanskrit literature. And in case there's a career as a Disney script scout in your future, you'd learn what a fairy tale romance looks like, desi style. No seven dwarves or trolls under the bridge, but gods, demons, and matchmaking geese, directing the fate of true love. That's worth a few minutes, right? So our story begins with the handsome young prince, Nal, son of one Virasena, who absolutely doesn't matter to us. Nell is a dashing young man, blessed with a myriad virtues. We're talking solid 10 on the male studly meter, tall, strapping like a chiseled god, Hrithik Roshan, Ryan Gosling, Omar Borkan. But he's also a strong and powerful commander of armies, deft with weapons, an excellent marksman, cheerful, kind, brave, generous, loyal, truthful, courteous to elders, patient with the young. Everyone loves him. Women swoon on the streets when they see him pass. He had a special gift with horses, almost a magic touch, relates Rishi Big Horse, who has a soft spot for hippophiles. And he loved to gamble, though in his case he was pretty good at it. Meanwhile, in the kingdom of Vidarbha, a little way south, or is it east, or maybe it's west? Okay, it's definitely not north. In the kingdom of Vidarbha lived a king named Bhima, no relation to our Pandava hero. After years of arduous effort, he had no children. Total mystery why. Then one day a Brahmin named Daman happens along and the king promptly offers him his queen, you know, in the spirit of hospitality. In this way, the childless king ends up with 4 children, the most notable, a jewel of a daughter named Damayanti. Damayanti is heart-stoppingly beautiful, tall, slender, of perfect limbs, flawless face, sparkling eyes, vivacious in spirit, charming, utterly delightful. So beautiful is she that her fame spreads throughout the 3 worlds, stirring the hearts of every man who hears about her. The most beautiful woman in the world, and a man like the god of love himself, it's a match made in heaven. Actually, scratch that. It's just a perfect match, natural and self-evident. It's only a matter of time before they're united. Nell hears of Damayanti, Damayanti hears of Nell, and their mutual curiosity grows into a consuming passion. So overpowering is the love Nell feels for Damayanti that, restless with desire for a woman he's never met, one day Nell cuts work early and lands up in the groves of the women's quarters. There are beautiful swans prancing about, or are they geese, doesn't matter. He catches one absentmindedly, but he almost drops it when the bird suddenly starts to speak in perfect Pandit Sanskrit. "Don't kill me," it cries urgently. "I can be of service to you. You love this girl Damayanti, right?" Nell is too astonished to speak. "I can help you. Here's what I'll do for you. I'll fly to her gardens, I know exactly where they are, and I'll tell her all about you. I'll describe you in such irresistible detail, she's going to fall in love with you immediately. She'll never even think of another man." How does a besotted lover pass up an offer like that? Nell jumps at it, talking swan or whatever. Deal. They shake on it and he releases the bird. The swans and its mates fly down to Vidarbha, to the Tivoli-inspired gardens of Damayanti. Unbeknownst to Nell, Dee's already positively disposed and has secretly been stalking his dating profile. Seated in the gazebo, she's scrolling through his ideal evening out and his hobbies. An equestrian champion, she notes, loves a day out riding in the woods. When a swan of almost unearthly beauty sashays down and perches itself beside her on the bench. "I see you're checking out Nell of Nishad country." Damayanti is perplexed to hear the swan speak. But any opportunity to discuss her beloved is a good one, even with a bird, and she responds eagerly. "Do you know him? What's he like?" "I do know him, and he's so much more than they say. Smart, talented, godlike in looks." The swan takes the bread she offers him and looks Damayanti over. "You know, come to think of it, you two would make an ideal match. You're the best of women, he's the best of men. It couldn't be any better. You two should totally get together." Damayanti is so delighted to hear this. She wants to embrace the swan. "I would love that. Can you say this to him too?" The swan promises. A few more pecks at the bread and it flies off whence it came. Days pass and Damayanti's sick with anxiety. She can't eat, she can't sleep. She spends all her time in the garden, staring into the skies or looking searchingly in the pond. Her dad starts to worry about her. She's Nubal, my lord, her friends suggest to him discreetly. You should get her married. The king reflects upon the advice. He wants only the very best for his daughter, so he decides upon a swayamvar, a groom-choosing ceremony. He'll assemble all the best princes in the world, carefully vetted and screened, and they will pick her groom with a flower garland. Soon, monogrammed invitations go out to every notable in the land. Hotels jack up prices. Every room within a 100-mile radius is booked. The groom-choosing ceremony for the most beautiful woman of the generation? They come from far and wide. Those deemed inadequate come simply to watch. Hey, where is everyone? The god Indra wonders, seeing the usual Kshatriya haunts suddenly gone quiet. Is the new Avengers film out? The itinerant rishis Parvata and Narada are visiting the heavens. Don't you know? It's Damayanti's groom-choosing ceremony. The intergalactic gossip Narada fills him in on all the juicy details. He projects Damayanti's Insta account onto the big screen for full effect. Stunning, right? You can just look at her all day. Every Kshatriya's dying to marry her. As they flip through Damayanti's posts, some of the world guardians walk in. God of death, Yama, God of the waters, Varuna, God of fire, Agni. Wow, who's this gorgeous thing? Narada starts over. Hey, why don't we go too? Yama's excited. I love her already. I bet she'd pick me. The others eye him with derision. But you're right, we should go. At the very least, it would be fun, right? And who knows, she might pick one of us. They discuss and make a plan. All four of them are going to go to vie for the hand of Damayanti. Now, I know what you're thinking. Uh-oh, the delicately calibrated romance of Nal and Damayanti, lovers about to meet for the first time. Nal is travelling in his most handsome coattails, assured by the swan that Damayanti loves him as he loves her, and he knows she's going to pick him. But now the gods are coming? What could possibly go wrong? Let's find out next time if you'll join me for another episode of the Mahabharata.